Welcome to the Zulu Time podcast, a straight talking conversation between two watch enthusiasts about the world of military watches. I hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to episode 89 of the Zulu Time podcast with your host Dan from Timely Underscore Moments. Right, guys, I hope you really enjoyed the last episode. And you are continuing, obviously, a positive vein into 2024. The last episode, if you missed it, was with Larry over at Cywar Wrist Check. He's a really cool guy. If you haven't checked that episode out, please obviously go and listen to it and give him a like, follow, and all the standard stuff that I ask you to do for all of my guests that come on to the Zulu Time podcast. This episode is going to be slightly different. It's what I've called or started to quote as a bit of a panel episode, and it's something that I want to bring into 2024 in the Zulu Time podcast more often, where I get multiple guests on and we talk a little bit more holistically about the world of horology and watch collecting and the watch industry. And with that being said, I'd like to bring my guests on today, which are AJ and Justin. Gents,
hello,
how are you?
How's it going, guys?
Great.
Guys, it's the first time that we have sat down as a panel, and it's the first panel episode of 2024. So firstly, I mean, I know I've spoken to you separately. I know that you guys had a good Christmas break, but I'm sure you're having a positive start to the new year as well.
Yeah, no complaints.
Yeah, sure.
Did you guys get up to anything fun, or was it just family time and chilling out?
Family time and anything but. I'm still on course. So I at the end of last year, we got some kind of bad news here in Bellingham. After 20 years gone diving, my local dive shop, she's selling and moving to warmer waters. And so that left me and a couple of my compatriots who've been working on diving and becoming a dive pro. We kind of had a scramble because we were planning on going the full route and become dive masters. Mm-hmm. And so we had to scramble, and she accepted a small group of us to finish up before she closes shop. And so on the 14th, barring any unforeseen PNW snowstorm again, even if it does, we're underwater circumstances, we graduate as dive masters on January 14th. We've been on course. I've been doing science of diving. I've been doing dive guide, and then I have all the pre-qualifications to be a dive master afterwards. So that's anything but relaxing. I've been bookworking and all that other jazz and diving in very, very tempid Pacific Northwest winter waters, gents.
I was about to say, all I'm hearing from this is you should have just followed your dive instructor to warmer waters, mate.
Dude, if she would have offered, I would have. I'm like, can I get your carry-on? Can I just jump in? Like, it's cool. But yeah, no,
Justin's got hundreds of acres, mate, down in Texas. I'm sure he would be more than willing, right, to give up some of those acres, put in an artificial lake, and you can both just go dive in warmer waters.
It gets cold down here though too. We'd have to we definitely have to put in some heaters in it, but it'd be good in the summertime.
Right on. Yeah. Justin, what about you? What have you been doing over the holiday?
Oh, went to New Mexico on a ski trip day after, and, you know, just did a bunch of family stuff. It was a family trip, so went with my dad and stepmom and two sisters and then my wife and kids, so just been busy.
Nice. I got back from Cyprus, guys, just before the new year, and had some nice sunshine as well, which is always good. Mm. So I think we've all had a relaxing break, obviously, other than AJ, but I'm sure you're relaxed a little bit, mate, because I know that, you know, you call it water therapy, don't you, or bubble therapy. Sure at some point you were probably relaxed, even though it's been a lot of diving in cold water. Guys, we have two traditions on the Zulu Time podcast, and obviously as you two are my guests, you can fight it out, but what watches have you got on your wrist? They're actually debating to fight it out.
Yeah, we're waiting. We're pausing for the other person to go, but I'll go ahead and go since I broke silence here. Today I'm wearing my Studio Underdog Model 01 in watermelon, and I'm wearing it on my Recon Team prototype leather NATO from Chesapeake Bay.
Nice. It's such a colorful and summer watch, and I feel that you're obviously channeling warmer climate already just through the watch that you've decided to wear. But it looks really cool, and every time I've spoken to Studio Underdog at various events in England, he's always been a really approachable and fun guy, which is what you want from an independent watchmaker, right?
Yeah, I think that was the right word you used there, was fun. I think that's kind of what smacks me in the forehead every time I look at this watch. When I look down at my wrist, my brain just goes fun. It's like it's just that bit of joy, kind of looking down at it, because it is, very different, if you will. Not the best chronograph, because there's not really like true minutes counter, marks on there. It's very vague when it comes to actually reading the exact minute, but it is a fun piece nonetheless. So
Nah, look cool, man. AJ, what about you?
Well, because I've been all dive all the time, I've got my Doxa Clive Cussler 300T, which is kind of my go-to, especially because part of my course we have to do night low vis and deep diving as guides. So and on top of that, I also have it on conveniently a Recon leather prototype watch strap.
We
No,
did
I
not
do not.
plan this, guys. We swear we did
No.
not plan this.
We
Oh
didn't.
no.
We definitely didn't plan this, and the worst bit is that people are going to think we planned it when I talk about
Yeah,
my wrist
right.
check. But very quickly, AJ, before we move away from your wrist check, I know you would have been diving at some point with your Elliot Brown over the holidays. How did your extra long hawk rigger stand up to the water?
So it's good. So I ended up taking off the keeper, because even though it is a longer strap, on my space suit of an arm known as a dry suit, I don't really need an extra keeper. But no, it worked good. I like the bigger buckle. It's easier to kind of manipulate and stuff. But yeah, I still kind of go to between it and I predominantly just because I'm more comfortable with it. I like my spring made. But dude, yeah, no, the Heartbreaker, it's fine. It's great. It's orange. I love orange. It's great.
Yeah, we've got to bring in some more Rescue Orange. Just so you're aware, bro, it is the only one in existence. So please don't lose it under the sea. So yeah, guys, I am flying into the new year with my A13A chronograph, the one that went to space, which obviously is now just it's amazing accolade. And Justin, thanks for letting me send you that article because I just think it was a cool story. We did not plan it, guys, but I'm also wearing it on the Recon Team Watch blog, Chesapeake Bay Leathercraft NATO, which by the way, is really comfortable. I think it just suits this watch really well. It gives me that Flieger vibe, which is really cool. I'm
It
showing the
does.
guys on the camera. You guys can't see it. In fact, you
Yeah,
can
the
see it because
A13
it.
is great. Yeah, A13 solid. I love that watch. I'm definitely gonna try and get my hands on one sometime in the next year or two. It's definitely on the long list, if you will.
Yeah, I mean,
That's cool.
Paolo's just a great guy as well. I sent him a few photos that I've been taking on, and I just want to quickly sh mention this because we're going to talk about a little bit of generic 2024, but I've got a lone Fuji camera in from Fuji UK, and I've just been messing around with the color renditions on there, and I sent him a few photos through, and it's really good because A, he's a nice bloke and he's always receptive to free media, right? Because a lot of people are, but again, really polite, and he said he's getting on really well. I know he delivered a special project to the B-21 Raider squadrons, which is really cool, that went up onto his channel. So yeah, he seems to be doing good things for good people doing cool things in cool and mysterious places, it seems. Moving away from all that, guys, looking at 2024, I thought before we get into the predictions that we would love for, the horological watch gods to listen to us and our meager and mere individual opinions that are just three guys chatting shit on the internet. What do you guys have planned for 2024 regarding your own media? Have you got any, are you going to spice it up a little bit, or are you going to continue doing the same kind of stuff, or have you got any new ideas, or just new, things that people need to look out for? Because obviously I always push people to you guys because, well, we always talk, right? So, and I like your shit. So if I like your shit, they'll like your shit.
That should be on a shirt for you.
Yeah, it's
Zulu
just a
Time
real
Podcast.
long,
Just drawn out with a bunch of commas and stuff in front of it. Yeah.
If I like your shit, you'll like their shit. Like that should be on your shirt. No, so I got a lot of irons in the fire. Belly Amp Podcast has an anniversary because we have an anniversary every year. It'll be 8 years for Belly Amp Podcast, over the air and online. Analog Explorer, I just kicked off season four. So everybody already knows that my first guest was Jason Heaton on the Analog Explorer for AE20. We talked about diving and mostly his background as a writer and bringing that forward to how he became, the gear dude that we all know and love, the watch guy that we all listen to on Grainado, and then all of a sudden now he is a novelist. So I kind of tried to tie those three acts together in that first episode. And I've got two more folks that I'm trying to work out times to keep recording. But and then lastly is I've been brought on to Deep Sea Magazine, and so I'm as I at my title that I've that they've lovingly agreed upon is I'm their CPO, I'm their Chief Podcasting Officer, or Chief
Nice.
Podcasting Octopus, if you ask me internally. Yeah, so I'm the host of the Made Under Pressure podcast, and we've got three awesome people that I haven't recorded with yet. But the first one is going to be Rachel Novaks, who's a free diving instructor and just yeah, really, really cool diver, really cool person. So I got a lot of stuff there. But yeah, just lots of irons in the fire for 2024.
I know with the Made Under Pressure podcast, it's clearly obviously diving centric because I listened to your pilots and your teaser episode with that. But are you going to sneak in a little bit of maybe a watch question to
Oh yeah.
some of the divers just to see what they dive with?
That was in the contract. If this is brought to you by the Analog Explorer, yeah, there's gonna be a watch angle. Especially because Deep Sea has a partnership with Ralph Tech out of France. So the Amphibian has dropped. It has been out for quite some weeks now. But like, if I have my way as CPO, maybe I will get the, CEO of Ralph Tech on the show, and talk about, kind of a watch angle in proper diving, because Ralph Tech makes commercial
Nice.
diving watches. Like
Nice.
that is their thing.
That would be a great segment too, like having commercial dive watch guys in to take their take, because you have Scurfa as well, who's
I think as well, like it's cool because especially within mine and Justin's circle, not so much your circle, AJ, but obviously mine and Justin's followers and kind of the content that we consume, clearly military based, right? It's always interesting to get that commercial aspect, especially with when it comes to diving, because as I said, the watch fam seems to be obsessed with divers' watches, and rightly so, because they're epic. But it always tends to lean towards this whole US Navy SEAL Frogman or MN heritage, all of that kind of stuff. And like you said, Justin, you've got Scurfer, who is a commercial diver. You've got, fuck me, we've even got Graham over at Peninsula Kelp. He's a commercial diver, right? And he dives with a military, yes, it's a military diving watch, but he has loads of other watches that he dives with. And I think, the other thing, at the back of at the end of 2023, when Teddy Baldassare had that video with his mate, was it Brett? Brad? The diving video where they talk about him as a diver and then the watches that he got through his diving commercial diving career. It's just a different spin on the same subject, and I think it's always interesting. So it would be cool to see what this podcast brings.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, yeah, and it's another creative niche, and I the timing of it was good because, like, me going in further into diving and stuff, I wanted the Analog Explorer to be like what I started it to be out of, but I wanted to kind of bring in a little bit of diving, and then this project kind of just fell right into my lap at the perfect time, where I'm just like, cool, now all that
Meant to
stuff I
be.
wanted to do, I can just put over here, and then all the stuff I was planning on doing for analogs, where you put over here, I have my little buckets. It's great.
Nice. Yeah, as Justin said, it's definitely meant to be, bro. And clearly you're the host or the suit most suitable host to kind of bridge the gap between the two subjects, which is cool. So I look
I
forward
hope
to
so.
listening to more of those when they come in. Justin, what about you, bro? I mean, I know the blog relaunched on a new server. And all of that kind of
Yeah,
stuff,
new
and
platform.
it
Yep.
looks
We got
look
new host. Yep.
yeah it looks really good. So what's the plan for the Recon Team Watch Blog, man, going forward?
Plans for 2024 is just keep chugging along with product reviews, just trying to, that's the main, thing with me is just I want to get good products out there from good people, and let the folks know what it is about it, you know, what's good, what's bad, you know, is it worth it? You know, what are the prices looking like? I'm just trying to bring good products to the table that sometimes people might skim over because there are so many products out there, you know, in 2024 now, you know, there's just so much stuff. It's not like 1980 where there's a handful then. I mean, there's so many micro brands. I think on what microbrand.com, there's some website that tracks all the listed micro brands that make watches. There's like 129 on there as of now. So there's a lot of stuff out there. You know, I'm just trying to find stuff that maybe I haven't even heard of either. Just explore, find new stuff, get new articles out. I definitely want to tap into doing some more video content. So that's one big focus for this year with me is going to be TED Talks, product reviews in a video format. So I'll have trying kind of both of those on there, you know, along with the audio stuff as well, doing more podcasts and stuff like that.
Well, if you ever need any guidance, bro, when it comes to a little bit of video, I'm sure AJ, I'm gonna
Absolutely.
AJ can help. I mean, I can also help, but I didn't want to make myself out to be like a video extraordinaire. But yeah, you know, we can definitely help with that.
For sure. Yeah, I'll definitely be picking
You are.
everybody's brain.
Sorry, AJ, what?
You are as you've had some awesome Fuji kit over the break. So yeah, you're a video guy. As my buddy, shout out to Darren over at Mango Chow Productions here locally. Like he always gives me a rash of shit for being a photog, and he's just like, hey, "How's it going, video man?" And I'm like, "I'm not a video man. So I'm gonna do the same thing to you, army photographer, media specialist extraordinaire. Photog is me is video. Like, come on."
Yes, it is. Yes, Justin, more than happy to help you, bro. And so is AJ after that. On the subject of gear reviews, I just want to point this out to people. You are clearly famed a little bit at the moment for watch reviews on the site and watch adjacent products. However, with this move into video and all that kind of stuff, I will send you a review that I will put through for this gear that I have or I've taken loan of and I'm returning shortly. Just because it's similar to watches, there's all these different price points. Everyone gets confused and people just have personalities, you know, when it comes to cameras and gear and what they want to use. And I think, like, I'm not saying I have the answer to everything, but I think I'm quite lucky in the fact that the trade has given me exposure to different brands, right? And I think because of exposure to different brands, I can at least come back with a little bit more of a generic kind of non-biased opinion on it, you know. And I think there's certain other gear watch related podcasts that kind of push certain brands too hard, and I don't think it's necessarily right because it just prices people straight out of photography and videography immediately. Because who on earth is going to buy a camera that is like 6 grand straight away? You know, when, you know, a lot of people, and AJ, you'll quote this, you know, quote it as well, you know, the best camera is the camera you have. And a lot of people just have their iPhone 15 Pro Max, you know. So, but I would like to also, bro, looking at in, you know, the future going into 2024 for the Recon Team Watch blog is to maybe dip my toes slightly outside of watches and look at the more adjacent things that but all of our audiences like as well, and kind of do a review on that kind of stuff as well. So hopefully that'll help you out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm definitely looking at getting a new camera. We've talked about that a few times, you know, just on our phone calls and whatnot over the last few weeks. So I wanted to do like a little write-up on shopping for a camera for this specific purpose, you know, because it, yeah, like you said, it is very niche. Like buying a $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 camera just to take pictures of watches is extremely niche. You know, most people are using their iPhones, like you said. Yeah, so I definitely want to do a write-up just like in high detail. What am I looking for? Comparing the different options, you know, because like you said, one of the Fujis had like a 100 megapixel chip in it or something like that.
Yeah, so the GFX line is a medium format camera and it's a
Yeah, like
100
I don't
megapixel
need a
sensor.
100 megs of, I don't need that. Like that's just
No.
overkill. You know, I'm making do with my little Canon that I have now. That's like a, I think a 25 or 26, something like that. It's like just shy of 30, but still takes great photos. But yeah, super niche, but that'd be
And
cool.
I would encourage if you haven't already, look at the used market. That's where I usually turn a lot of my students
Oh yeah,
and
for sure.
even myself. Like I, full disclosure, not all my gear was bought new. Like, you know, there's a lot of the times where you can go to up and hashtag not sponsored, you know, MPB, if you're from the States or even abroad, mm-hmm. I think MPB was even ships internationally. You know, a lot of the houses have a good used, reputable used stuff. And that's how I bought some of my gear. You know, whether it's that or just dealing locally, because there's a lot of photogs here in town. But like, you know, the thing that I think that, and I'm going to get on my pulpit, sorry guys, but like the one thing that I think that does not get talked about a lot in those gear adjacent type of podcasts and articles is buying used gear. And you know, there I'll throw a shout out to Matthias Berling over in Scandinavia area, where, you know, he's famous for like talking about older cameras and what their pros and cons are, and what that means for you as a photographer, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, he's, you know, just like us, he's a pro. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, if you go down this road, saving cashola and what that experience is like to get that gear, I think would also be a value add coming from Recon as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. And that just adds to people's learning curve too, with like helping them to actually understand what they're doing with it and what they can get out of the gear, like especially photography, because we talked about this. People will post like, you know, what their settings are on these photos that they're posting. And sometimes you see stuff and you're like,
how?
Huh. You just kind of like, you rub your head. You're like, that, I don't know. That just didn't really make sense to me, you know? And sometimes people do that, you know, they'll just buy gear, don't know exactly what they're doing. They're just kind of, you know, winging it. And there's nothing wrong with that at all, but
no,
it is kind of hard to find great content out there about photography. There's some YouTube guys that I've found. That's kind of where I, you know, found my way in photography, was like YouTube reviews and watching specific things on certain types of photography. But yeah, I think written articles are for me better to understand. So that would definitely be sick.
And also, you know, with a written article, they're almost like you can have it open. You don't have to have anything.
Exactly.
Playing.
You don't have to pause it.
And you can just have it up. You can be, you know, tinkering in your little studio or your, you know, your area that you've turned into your studio for your product photography, be that, you know, watches, knives, cameras, or whatever you're taking photos of in our case, you know.
Yeah.
And you can just refer back to it, you know.
Yeah.
When I went through training, I had all the notes printed because I'm a little bit old school like that, you know. Clearly, you know, analog explorer, we like it, you know, analog stuff like
old
that.
School
old school, yeah. You know, and all that kind of stuff. But it's so much easier to have that, and like you said, instead of scrubbing back and through a YouTube video. And as great as that is, you know, the other side of it is I find with certain YouTube videos, it's just like, if I don't get on with the person's voice, or they're too busy trying to market their channel, you know what I mean, like I'll type in a very specific thing that I want to do on like Adobe, for example, and there'll only be 25 seconds of that video that I actually need. However, I've got to endure 7 minutes and find that 25 seconds. You know, that's the problem, isn't it? Whereas the good thing, like you said, you know, with the Recon Team Watch blog, the fact that it's a written blog, you could turn around and be like, right, I'm going to outline how I take a watch photo in this conditions, or to get this kind of look, and this is the method in which I do it, and have it down there. And like you said, that's, you know, is that giving the secrets away? I don't know. Is there secrets when it comes to watch photography? I don't know. But I think it's more beneficial to the community to turn around and say, this is how we do it, and this is what we get, you know?
Yeah. I guess it's just dependent on like what you want, you know, like what is your end goal? I think that's the biggest thing that people need to figure out at the end of the day, is like, what are you trying to do with it? And what's your style? You know, don't try and just do what other people do too. That's a big thing I see, is like people just trying to copy exactly what somebody else that they see, which I guess that's like, that could be conveyed as like a form of flattery, you know, like trying to just redo it. But yeah, I think individuality is cool in this community. And I think that is what I kind of gravitate towards. I think like within anything, watches, straps, you know, any other type of gear too, I just kind of look for stuff that's different and stuff like that. But yeah, for sure.
You and me both, bro. You and me both.
With oddballs.
Just like to stand out from the crowd a little bit. You know, and also I want to just like leave it off before I go a bit selfish and talk about my plans for 2024. But like, I think with photography as well, like you talk about finding your style, there's also nothing to say that there's nothing wrong with changing your style. You know, looking at what media is out there in the world, looking at how other things are shooting, look at what other things are trending, and turn around and say, right, actually, I do kind of like, you know, take take from bits that you like
best
and
elements.
Trying to push it in. Don't, like you said, don't fully, you don't have to fully, like you said, emulate
copy,
someone
you
else.
Can, you, it can,
you know,
influence
you can take,
the work. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's another way, you know, to gain traction. I look at certain companies, and me and AJ have had this conversation a lot off air, and I know Justin, me and you have as well. And I look at certain companies and say, they've got fantastic media presence, but it's kind of like plateaued. And it's not going to go anywhere. And the reason it's not going to go anywhere is because the media that they push out is exactly the same, you know?
Yeah.
And I get annoyed because I bang my head against the wall going, but you guys could be so much bigger than you are, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Some of those pages I find that they almost, it seems like everything's like AI generated. Like the page is just, it's just weird, you know? It doesn't look like it's a true, like, you know, it's heavily edited, just doesn't look real. And it's just over and over again. Yeah, it's just kind of tasteless at some point to me. You know, that's just my personal taste, but you know,
it's funny because me and AJ have spoken about this before. Like, we talk about getting things right in camera so we don't have to smash it out on you know, on Photoshop all the time. But like, it's funny because, like you said, with watch photography, you know, everyone gets obsessed with removing the dust or, you know, the specs. You know, I make sure my crystal is cleaned, and then I'll use an air can
sometimes
once, you know, if I remember. But that's it, isn't it? It's about showing. I feel like when we're product photography, yes, we're here to present a product, be that a watch, a strap or whatever, but like, we also have to present it, not the fact that I can whiz it on Photoshop and use the AI remove tool to remove all the dust, you know?
I focus on, so like, yeah, like product photography, right? So if I'm working for a client, that's a little bit different than when I do my own stuff, full disclosures. But outside of that, you know, a lot of the people have asked me, like, especially since diving, you know, when am I going to take a bigger camera down? When am I going to take a better camera or a flash array or whatever? And I shoot most of everything underwater with either my iPhone or with a GoPro 9 Black. Okay. Largely because as analog explorer, like I want to do stuff. And if I can capture it, cool. If not, I have those memories. I don't have to feel like I have to share every damn thing.
That's
the analog explorer. So yeah, a lot of the times my wrist shots in the water are taken off of a GoPro. And are they the best? No. But do they show like the strap I'm using, the watch, where I'm at? Yeah, like that's what I kind of want to convey. And is it the most, like, now stack that against my A7? No, it's head and heels completely different. But the thing is that I've had more people reach out to me, you know, whether they're a diver or not, and be like, you know, hey, that strap, how did it handle, you know, a year of just brutality? Right. Or what do you, like you asked me, like, you know, how do I like the Holton and the bezel? Absolutely love it. Like, I can grip it with big chunky gloves, like those type of things, like I can speak to. And that's what I'd rather do with an image or with a video is get a conversation out of it. Not necessarily like, look, I don't have a huge following, but I have a lot of conversations outside of my main feed, you know, whether that's on the Baltic or patining bronze or whatever. And that's more of what I go after when I post an image or I post a video, is if somebody wants to chat, dude, slide me a DM. I am happy to chat. You know, if I know anything, I'll let you know. If I don't, I'll tell you, I don't know. Like that's my angle.
Yeah. I said it in a AD once for a rather large British brand. And we were talking about media photography and all that kind of stuff. And I said, you're not selling a watch, you're selling a lifestyle. And that's the point. Sometimes it's not even about the watch. The watch is in the image or in the video, but it's a very minor part of what they have actually shot in that particular media package.
Was there an F1 car in the background?
There wasn't an F1 car in the background. There was a fuck off mountain, though. So leave it at that. So yeah, it's funny. But guys, before we move on to obviously the main topic of our watch predictions, I was going to reel off a few things. You know, clearly I've entwined myself with writing some articles because I've said to Justin I'm going to write about a camera now. AJ, similar to the Bellingham podcast, I've also got an anniversary, which is just gone by the time this is aired. Zulu Time podcast has reached 4 years, guys. You've had four years of my dulcet tones talking about watches and occasionally having a rant. But obviously, with that, I felt it was really, the timing was right, shall we say, for me to get a coin in. If you may or may not have seen, at the end of 2023, a lot of the posts were spammed with some absolutely fantastic coins from Challenge Coins UK. The designs were, it's rattling in its little plastic box, so I'll take that out. The designs were taken directly from the Zulu time badges, which again, have kind of been
Yes.
around pretty much since year one. And I think the coins are cool. Everyone else who's received the coin, because a few of the coins, spoilers, have gone out to people who are Zulu time podcast timely moments adjacent, for want of that expression, or just supporters of myself within obviously this wider watch hobby. And I've had a lot of good feedback, and I've also had a lot of feedback with people messaging me going, I want to buy one, or I'd like one, how can I get one? And I think I've come up with an idea, and it ties in obviously the plan for 2024. Obviously, I want to continue doing episodes. I want to look a little bit more about wider horology now, a little bit more industry things, look at more generic stuff, kind of obviously keep this vein of military where I can, but look at the wider stuff, because fundamentally the wider watch industry affects my niche that I like to think that I've got a little bit of experience to be able to comment on. So I want to do that. I want to do more panel shows like this. And I want to obviously continue bringing on people who don't necessarily have a platform, be that a written blog or a page with a massive following, to give them a bit of a voice. I think the power of a podcast is that it humanizes people. You can hear people's voices and intonations, so who that they are not a robot, right? So that's my plan for the podcast going into 2024. But with that, I also want to launch a photography competition, obviously clearly to do with watches and gear and all that kind of stuff. And I am in the process of getting together some bits where people can win this competition. But obviously, as a part of the competition, they will be able to win a set of Zulu time coins. So I'll actually probably send out two. The reason for that is because I'm selfish and I want people to display both sides in the photos when they receive them, because the designs are different. But then also, a couple of Zulu time patches and all that kind of stuff. But I'm going to announce the theme when I come up with it, but clearly it's going to be to do with something to do with watches and photography and a little bit of travel slash adventure. But gents, I would like you guys to help me panel the entries into obviously this little competition that I'm going to run. So guys, it will all be announced on an episode in the podcast. Once I've got all the stuff to win in, I'll announce it in a podcast, how I'm going to run it, the length of time it's going to run, and then just so you're aware, to humanize it and make it fair, there will be three judges. It'll be myself, Justin, and AJ. So yeah, I've enlisted your help there, guys.
Heck yeah, happy to help.
So yeah, moving on to the actual subject, which I brought you on for, guys, 2024. What are your watch predictions? Because I've written down a few things that I would like to see, and I'm just kind of just spitballing here to see if they are similar things to what you guys may have noticed or maybe hoped for. But I'm going to start because I can. Omega Spy Rate. So I think Omega, I mean, admittedly, we know that Daniel Craig was caught wearing a White Dart Speedmaster at the end of 2023. So clearly a White Dart Speedmaster is due in at some point in 2024. I think with the launch of that watch, there is potential where the Spy Rate escapement is going to get utilized or start to be utilized across more of their watches. Now, we saw in 2023, it was utilized in the Omega Speedmaster Professional Racing, the one with a really cool honeycomb kind of dial with the bi-compax sub-registers and automatic
Yeah, the
movement.
super racing one.
That's the one. That's the one. Guys, if you don't know what the Spy Rate movement does, effectively, it means you can regulate incrementally to 0.01 of a second, I believe,
Something like that.
for every turn without fail on a mass level. So
Yeah.
it's not, it's clearly it's not out of the realms of impossibility where this kind of technology is going to drop down into the lines. But with it being in the Omega Speedmaster Super Racing line, long sentence, probably just as long as the reference number to that watch. I think that they've kind of shown their hat a little bit, and I think that we're going to start seeing this thing being dropped into more Speedmasters to begin with.
That would be cool,
So,
yeah.
to describe it for those that may not know the escapement, so it's got like a proper escapement and it's got a proper balance balance spring and wheel, but with a really cool little hyper small etched like or cutout of Omega, and it spins as a traditional hairspring, but on the balance bridge itself is something all I can say is like a high performance torque X like screw with an a plus or minus, and that's how you would do your regulation, as opposed to, and you still have your anchor pivot for the spring itself, so that's still there too, but like for regulation, as opposed to those of us who have probably done that on our Seikos or whatever, of moving that little
lever
that little lever and not slip mm-hmm. On your blade, you know, this is actually front and center with like a Pentalobe or a Torquex. I'm not quite sure what they're using. It's hyper small anyway, but it, you know, from like you were saying, like a high performance level of, you know, finessing your movements, obviously taking it to an AD, or if you do it yourself, great, right into the show, let mm-hmm. us know how that goes. But I like the fact that it gives the serviceability front and center, as opposed to like, you know, which one am I supposed to push again? Like, I like that. I like the functionality that they're building into, you know, this thing where it's not just pretty, it's also functional. Like, I like that.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Yeah, I think Omega is 100% the people's luxury watch, if you will. You know, I feel like they're innovating for the everyday working man still. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're still very well a blue collar man's watch. Like, it's still mm-hmm. very affordable. It's not 10 times the price, you know, as what they used to be. They're still somewhat affordable in today's, you know, economic standing. So yeah, I think that's huge. I think that's definitely huge. You're not having to send this thing now to some, you know, AD or to a service center and having to pay, you know, $300-$400 to have them re-regulate this movement and do whatever else you don't want them to do, you know, to it.
Yeah.
You can just pop it open and do it yourself. I think that's a great innovation in the right direction. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if anything, you know, talking about it like that way as well, thoughts just come to my head is they've effectively now turned an in-house movement back to the simplicity of a non-in-house movement, right? Through servicing, because like you said, All these independent watchmakers, service centers, be they, you know, backed by Omega / Swatch as an actual licensed one, or just they were previously trained and have changed their, you know, and become independent, all they need to have is that tiny tool, right? You know, because all the other stuff, you know, again, Elena, I hope you're listening, obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, I'm assuming you can all strip down an in-house movement and cleaning it and putting it together is pretty much the same. The regulation is one of the more difficult parts of watch servicing. But if it is just down to having this tiny screwdriver that can basically regulate it, you're golden, right? You know, solid, I mean, let's just also put in there, you know, these watches are already METAS certified. You know, these things are already accurate anyway. Yeah. Right? These things are already accurate. So is it 0 to +2 a day? I'm sure. You know, I just want to say that beats the other watch brand that has a crown on it. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
You know?
All day.
All day, every day.
The price, dude, for a fraction of the price.
You know, and I get it. You know, like we said, you know, Omega, I believe you're right, you know, that Omega offer a lot of value. I believe that they are considered luxury and like everyday luxury in terms of attainable, because you can walk into the shop and get one. You know, that's what makes it attainable, right? You know, you might have to wait, you know, for a particular Speedmaster with a Snoopy on it for a little bit longer, but they're still going to turn up, right? You know, and I've seen them in the shops.
They're stored everywhere. Yeah, like you can call an AD, you know, 2 hours away any day of the week. Like, they're just everywhere. So that's what's cool about them. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, I get it. You know, it's still a lot of money for an item, right? We've always said this in the watch fan. But if you were just to be not like us guys, where we've got an addiction problem. We are not one watch people. But if you were to be a one watch person and just have that one watch and go, right, you know what, I'm going to go, you know, I've got this promotion and this birthday and this landmark milestone in my life to commemorate. I'm going to go by myself and throw down $6,000 on an Omega Speedmaster or an Omega Seamaster and have that one watch. Bit like what my dad did in 1969 with his Omega Chronostar. And just, that's you done.
Well, that's in it, times 100, because it's modern manufacturing. So you know that watch would now last the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and easily,
you just take care of it and it'll last you the rest of your life. And they're built, I mean, bomb proof nowadays for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think Omega just continue to innovate. I know clearly they are like the premier within the Swatch group, and that is very clear with the things that they've been releasing over the last couple of years and iterations. You know, think about the fact that they've 3D scanned a 3-2-1 Omega Speedmaster movement back a few years ago, and now you have the same watch as it was in 69 if you really want to be nostalgic. And like you said, or you could go Spirate, you know, for nine, I think it's only, guys, I know this makes it sound really frivolous, but it's only $9,000. But when you think about what we get into, when we look at all the specs and what you buy and what you get, a Speedmaster Super Racing for $9,000 or a Rolex Daytona for, what's it, 25?
Something like that.
Yeah, and up. I think I saw somebody buy one the other day. I saw it on Watch Crunch. It was like $52,000 for this Brilliant. Daytona. Like,
yeah.
And it's wild. Like, that's just absurd to me. I can't do that.
No. So, yeah, you know, I think a lot of people's wives would kill them for that.
Yeah, like, I would no longer be allowed to even wear a watch anymore. Like, I would be buried in that watch, whatever. Like, I'm gone.
Yeah. Yeah, no. When you have an American pickup truck on your wrist, that's a hard sell.
Much, yeah.
That's hard sell. Yeah, no. I like. I mean, we're all kind of in the agreement. Like, you know, when it comes to Omega, it's definitely the people's luxury. Dan, you and I have talked about it. Like, I see Omega as the definition of luxury. And what I mean that is because they're so high tech. If you're a geek. Like, yes. Over the years, we've watched the, you know, AMD versus Intel, you know, in the gigahertz wars and rush. Like, that's what I see with Omega, because of they do stuff like that. You know, they didn't have to do this, but they did. You know, we have, you know, lever escapement. They have column wheels. They have all the stuff that we all know and love. And they didn't just do like, oh, we'll just throw silica hairspring in there, or we'll just do this. Yeah. You know, it's cool in the fact that they're doing. What you're buying is high tech, you know, and that to me is a luxury, you know, like the fact that you're getting something that is Meta certified, you're getting something that can, in this case, be even more hyper tuned, as it were. And that, I, you know, isn't that luxury? Like the luxury of having that level of detail down to the half second or whatever, you know, isn't that what luxury is supposed to be? Not just the status.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's something that is like, if you didn't have it, you know, it's like that one thing where you're like, man, if I had that, like, it would just be so much better. You know, it's like, you kind of can equate it to like living out in the woods. You know, if you go and actually live out in the woods, like having a saw, bro, that's a luxury.
Yeah.
Having a $20 electricity. Saw, that's a damn luxury. Yeah, like having a generator. That's a
indoor plumbing. That's a luxury.
I don't know what you, I don't know what.
Right, yeah.
Exactly, I agree. You know, I think as well, like, I keep putting off the purchase of a Speedmaster because I just have this feeling that it's effectively going to be like my exit watch.
yeah, I kind of have that same feeling too, but this is the year, I'm sure.
So yeah, I want to quickly just move on to my second point that I pulled out of when I was obviously collating ideas or my thoughts on 2024. And it does tie in with Amiga. And the reason I've used Amiga first is because it ties in with this. And if you look at it back in the 2023, there was a lot of like boutiques opening, particularly in the Asian market. And I think with this emergence of watches and this push more into the Asian market, I also want to predict that we're going to start seeing smaller cases coming back into fashion. You know, I've got multiple size wrist guys. I would fit in very well in a Hong Kong AD, just throwing that out there. So I think potentially that these smaller wrist options, you know, to those who have gargantuan belts around their wrists and weirdos like that, I feel that, you know, smaller watches are going to come back into fashion as well. So I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, I think so. That kind of dovetails in my prediction. If not smaller cases, because I mean, we look at a lot of the big brands, they're still producing large watches. Look at IWC, even though IWC is trying to make them smaller. The thing that I'm hoping for is kind of like I was just making reference to the old gigahertz race, is in movements, making them thinner. And that way you get the case tallness down. Like you can have, when we've all experienced this, you can have a 41, 42 mil case, but if it is 10 millimeters thin, it wears a lot nicer, a lot different than say a Holton that stacks up to 13, 14 mil. And I'm not knocking the Holton. Different experience, different tool. But you know, the thing that I love about like the Miyota series, like the 9000 series, which I have in the Aquascaf, you know, it's, I love the fact that it is a 39 millimeter case, but it's also, I think 10 or 11 millimeters tall for a dive watch. You know, I'm hoping we see that trend, because unfortunately with Seiko movements, they are taller movements versus Miyota. And with Miota, the, I mean, 2023, we all called it, like, it was the GMT race. Everybody and their cousin was producing a GMT. I'm hoping that we see, you know, the race to having thinner cases, not necessarily smaller cases. That way, the bigger cases can still exist, but we get the less top heavy, that type of feeling on our wrist.
They're way about, I don't know. I mean, talk about the GMT race. I mean, you picked up one, didn't you, Justin? I mean, your Jack Mason is that's got a Miota movement.
I picked up two GMTs actually. Yeah, the EB Beachmaster. Yeah, and then the Jack Mason Strato Timer with that had the Miota 9075 in it. Yeah,
but that's quite a thin watch, isn't it? If I remember rightly, you know, that goes into AJ's point, right?
I think it's under 12. I think it's somewhere in the 11 range, but it's a little bit thicker just due to the fact of the case shape that they chose to go with, which was like the turtle style. So it is just a little bit thicker because they have to get that roll going on the sides. But yeah, that it's a decently thin watch for sure. It's not 14, 15, you know. Some of those dang chronographs they make, bro, are way too big. Like,
I mean,
you see, like, some of these things I look at them, I'm like, bro, what are y'all doing? Like,
they're up there
in the design studio and you walk into my office and say 45 mils, bro, you're fired. You're fired. Get out. We don't want you here. 40 mils, bro. Just make them realistic. Like, 40, 42 on the big end. Like, geez. It's wild,
bro. And like you said, when they wear high as well, like you said, especially if you want to wear them on the NATO, as we are wearing.
Yeah, a lot of Breitling stuff is like that. Like, Breitling's, modern Breitling is unwearable. It's unwearable. 44 mils, and then it's like 14 mils thick on all of their stuff. Yeah. Like, it's just way too big.
And what you'll find
UFC fighters are all wearing them.
And also, what you'll find with the Breitlings is that they'll not only be thick, they'll also have a domed crystal, which makes them
domed crystal, extra giant bezels. Like, they overdo it. They went hardcore with the, like, diesel train from, like, 2010, bro, and just ran with it. Like, they must have hired somebody from diesel. Like, that's the only answer I can give you. It's too much.
Do you think that that's what's going to happen to Universal Geneve now that they've been bought by Breitling? In 2024.
Oh God, yeah, they're all gonna be 46 mil, 47 mil.
I hope not, but no, like, especially when we look at the OG Universal Genevieve's, like, they were
beautiful,
the epitome of the small gentleman's complicated, quote unquote, you know, tool watch. Like, that I hope that era comes forward with modern manufacturing. And
Jen, so are you saying that you wouldn't buy a pole router if it had the circumference of the pole?
that would be a polar router. No, like I said, I'm hoping, if anything, like, you know, if cases being what they are, because let's face it, gents, like, there are, I mean, these manufacturers are making big case watches because they do sell. Like, these I've talked to enough you know, companies where they're making them because, you know, that's what sells. Like, and they're in the business of selling watches. I had an owner once tell me that. It's like, I'm in the business of selling watches. I would love to do a lot of different designs, and they do that in-house for, you know, them and their family and friends. But as for the wide watch world, like, yes, I think a trend that we've all spotted is certain brands are listening to the enthusiast market or listening to influencers within the enthusiast market, which is cool. The second thing that I'm hoping to see, and this is just me pie in the sky, because everybody knows I suck at predictions. I love the mod.
Hey, you predicted the Navi timer.
Okay, kind of, but you know that's okay. Okay, one in 40 years does not make a trend. So, like, but okay. So I love the watch mod community. Obviously, everybody who knows me, you know, I still tinker and such, and. What I've always longed for is more parts available that you don't have to just scrounge or know somebody for Miota modding. And, you know, I mean, the gold standard NH35, NH36, you know, the 7S26, you know, that series of movement, you know, all day, every day, especially in the last, I'll say, 5 years. I mean, you've got shout out to Nomokis, you've got name them, Seiko Mods. All of these parts that I would have longed for when I was just freshly doing modding, I would have longed to have that, as opposed to, like, having to know, you know, Dr. Seiko Stain or One Second After or any of these other folks. You know, I'm hoping that we see in 2024 the mod community explode even more, but moving not just from Seiko movements, but also to Miyota. Because with that said, you can get thinner cases, and with it more, you know, you have more fun. You know, just we know what the SKX base model can do, and we know what we can mod on that. I'm pretty sure it is the Baskin of Robbins of mods. We know every flavor now. And I'm hoping to see that pivot over to Miyota. That's my second one for 2024.
That'd be cool. I also like Miyota as well, because I have one in my Tandem. I think they're great movements.
Yeah, solid for sure. Nothing wrong with them at all.
So Justin, what's yours?
One of my biggest ones is prices. I think that we will see prices come down a little bit in 2024. And I am bringing my evidence forward now. Watch Shots has the watch market at down 8%. And the watch market as a whole has been down since basically the beginning or the end of the first quarter of 2023. It's been tanking all year. Mm-hmm. So you look at the big brands. I think Omega is like one of the only ones that is still plus right now. Yep. They're still ahead in the market. But Rolex was down like almost 9% the last time I checked. All the big name brands are down like 12%, but the whole market as a whole is down, which is incredible, but almost 9%, which is huge. And I think that until prices start to come down, they're not going to sell watches. Like, and that's evident right now. They're not selling watches right now. Everything else is so dang expensive. People have drawn back on the luxury goods, which is watches, because you don't need them. It's 2024. Yeah. You got a watch, you got a car, you've got TVs, you've got radios, you've got all these other things that can tell you the time. You don't need a watch. So I think that we're going to see prices come down. I don't think it's going to be drastic, but I think just we're going to generally see prices come down a little bit. I think we'll see it largely in the micro brand space, the lower luxury space, like around the Ball, Omega. I think they'll pretty much ride the wave with what they're doing. I don't think they're really going to fluctuate much, because I think that they come in at such a great value, like we said. Yeah. But yeah, I think.
And also, I guess with Omega, they don't have to, because they're part of Swatch Group, right? Swatch Group have got all these other brands that kind of, like you said, tier, don't they?
They prop them up. Yeah. So they're making money off of all these other companies, I'm sure, by allocating out machinery and spaces and such like that. Yeah, I'm sure. And marketing teams too. Yeah. I'm sure they have all kinds of deals, but I think we'll see some prices come down.
Do you think?
I hope so. Anyways,
exactly.
Consumer, I hope so.
Do you think as well, like with the emergence of this potential price, it not necessarily massive like drop that with, you know, it's not like a Wall Street crash that we're predicting here, but like with either a plateau or steadying out or slight drop, you know, how little some of the larger companies regularly put their percentages up by, like, was it 2.5% every year on the year because they could. God. We might see that not happen for the next couple of years, or it might just plateau. But do you think as well, with these potential for the drop in the market with cheaper prices at, like you said, lower luxury and independent micro brand spaces having to fill that void, do you think as well we're going to see more creativity at a lesser price point? You know, we talk about GMT movements being utilized, thinner cases potentially being utilized. You know, AJ, you brought up that point of Miyota and we not knowing all the flavors that we can have with this thing. Do you think that we could see all these things coming together and we can start seeing Miyota movements at an acceptable price in a different watch complication or different colorway for something sub, I don't know, hit me with a price point 500, you know what I mean?
Sure. I mean, possibly. I mean, the thing, I see the same trend that you're seeing, Justin. But I also see, like, again, watch companies are in the business of selling watches. So, I mean, if anything, what they'll do to ride this out is go on reserves. So, like, they have the cases, they have their patents, they have... And I think they'll just kind of either cut back production or honestly.
Yeah, we'll see layoffs possibly, you know, like we have seen already just here in the late. Yeah.
Yeah. I hate to say it, but like with inflation being what it is globally, I mean, on your side of the Atlantic and ours, you know, I think I heard somebody, I had an economist say, like, you know, I don't think we're going to go. Like, everybody's waiting for us to go back or prices to come down. I don't know if we're going to see that, you know, and especially because in the watch fam, like we've been living in a bubble. So yeah, we saw a little bit of easing of the bubble. And on the high end, we saw that in the Rolex. I mean, Ben Clymer's been talking about on his new show, like he's been talking about like the auction market and stuff. And I'm not an auctioneer, but it is interesting to see their observations on the upper crust, high end, piece unique style type of thing, and seeing what's going on there. That kind of indicates to me the bubble has popped, but that doesn't, I don't think, reflect down on the lower end because manufacturing costs are the cost. So, you know, if anything, on with the area that we're talking about, I could see more limited runs or more, and we've kind of seen this, a lot more collabs, a lot, you know, trying to bridge more communities to get the watch sold, as opposed to bringing the price point to get more watches sold. Because they're in the business of making money. They have a set production cost, whether that's 2x, 3x, 4x, whatever it is. And whether that's privately owned or if that is with stockholders, you know, they have to deliver. So that's kind of, I'm not poo-pooing what you're saying, but I
No,
think,
I understand. Yeah, completely. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, for sure.
yeah, I think in the upper echelon, yeah, I think that probably is a trend that we're going to see is downward, but on the
Yeah, luxury
enthusiasts.
goods are gone first. Yeah, I think that's for sure. I think also, like, we talk about manufacturing, like, a lot of these smaller micro brands that just all of a sudden popped up in 2022, 2023, their initial costs are going to be 20, 30% higher generally than their second, third runs that they do. And yeah, that's due to them just making, you know, just meeting these people who are manufacturing this stuff. They're kind of, you know, generating this relationship and trying to figure out how many they need to order. Sometimes you get those companies that don't order enough or they order too many, and then they're trying to fluctuate prices. Yeah, but I hope I see prices come down just as a consumer. But
Sure, I hope so too. Like,
yeah,
I mean, if we see more
absolutely.
prices come down as a consumer, I'm gonna have to get another watch box, guys, and that's not never good.
Yeah. You know, like one of my favorite things about this niche space that we are in is in the watch community is like the random ones that pop up that catch my attention. You know what I mean? That's where I spend most of my money on watches is not, it's not this long drawn out like, ooh, I see this Rolex, I'm gonna save up $20,000 and then go buy it in you know, a couple of years. It's like, oh, I don't know what I want. I'm just gonna keep, you know, shopping around with my eyes, and then something pops up, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I gotta try that out, and then I buy it, you know, and I just kind of that snowballs throughout the year. But yeah, I think one of my other big ones that I think one of you said something about is color. I think that continuation, because I know you guys have seen throughout 2023, it's been a colorful year. There's been
Yes, please.
loads of crazy bright art deco, just really cool stuff coming out. And I think that those have sold really well. I think that those have been the focal point of the year. I think that generally the black dial, white dial, the plain Jane stuff is just not really grabbing people's attentions anymore. So I think we're going to see more of that. And like AJ said just a second ago too, is the dual watch collabs. I think we'll see a lot of that in 2024 for sure.
I mean, I hope we don't, because you know what that means, guys. More Moonswatch.
Yeah, I can't stand
This
that
is
either, but yeah.
a safe place. Safe place.
Yeah.
I don't I, no no trigger no trigger warnings, please.
Yeah, no trigger.
You know, okay.
It
Anyway,
looks
no
shocked.
color color shots fired. Shots fired. Colorful year. I'm gonna dovetail into that a little bit because something that got pointed out to me, especially in my day job and profession, we look at generations because that's, you know, education. We rely on generations of people coming up. The thing I think that plays into is Gen Z. You know, like they're a different kind of crop, and let's face it, like they are now in their, you know, 20s and such, and they're getting their first big boy, big girl job, and maybe they commemorate that and stuff. And how do these, you know, century-old watch houses market themselves to be that to them when they are in the era of the Apple Watch or connected technology and, you know, all that other jazz. And I think that is where this is kind of coming in because the old guard, black, blue, maybe white if you're a cave
Dress
a cave
dial, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, you know, that era is staunchly entrenched in those of us of Gen X and millennial. And now with this newer generation, with you know their temperament and their aesthetics and such. Perhaps this is the global watch community, micro brand all the way up, you know, trying to address that demographic and being like, hey, you know, we're inclusive, check out what we got, you know, and how that lifestyle blends into, you know, the watches, as we, you know, market watches, the lifestyle of the watch markets themselves into Gen Z. And then, you know, Gen Alpha's too young. I mean, my son has a block watch, but you know, we don't know what that generation is going to be like, but I kind of feel
those are colorful though too, right? Like I think that totally. Also kind of falls right in with that. Yeah. Cause the block watches are sick because they have cool colors and they're all color matched. Yeah. And yeah, I love that about them. They're aesthetically pleasing. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and much to Neil's like cringe, I've dove with them. Like I've tested that 100 meters water resistance.
Yeah, they're cool. Watch.
I mean, it's great, but like I agree with you, and I feel like that whole ethos I think might be coming out of the watch brands trying to figure out the next crop that we need to get into either enthusiasm or you know the luxury side of things, because I don't feel like the old ways of Patek aren't going to speak to this generation. I don't feel.
Nope. They don't speak to me, let alone the next generation. Okay, well, but you know what I mean? It's true, isn't it? You know,
like they're, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, 100%. Cause yeah, there's so many watches out there that like they make the same thing as somebody else, basically. You know what I mean? Stainless steel, black dial. They kind of drone into this one thing, you know? And I think that, what's that watch brand that does the like the cow as the like seconds hand, you know, and like a flying saucer? Second. Dude, those are so freaking cool. And you can't even like really read the, I mean, I don't know if I could really read the time because I'm ADHD. I'd probably have to like really try, but they're cool. They're fun. They're weird.
I'm a big fan of Segon's work. Like,
I have to get one of those at some point. I just saw one the other day and I was like just blown away. I thought it was so interesting.
Another cool one that's similar to the Second is, did you see that WMT one, which was done as if it was a drawing? There's like the cartoon.
I haven't seen it.
It's like a cartoon, like pop arty kind of. I think it was either a sub or a chronograph thing, and it was impressive because it's done like he's drawn it, and then it's made out of paper, obviously. But it's not, right. It's just all the different colors that you can get onto a dial and stuff like that. Done in collaboration with that artist who used cardboard, and he drew and made watch. Models of watches, like famous watches, out of cardboard, and it's basically like a carbon. Nice. It's just fun, right? You know, I think you know, I'm gonna widen it a little bit more before we move on to clothing notes. I just think 2024, right? We always say this, we've got high hopes for the watch industry, and we always hope that you know, good things come out of it. We want people to, you know, obviously get into the watch collecting hobby or watch, you know, fam in general, be that with one watch or multiple watches, like we have this addiction. But I hope, like you said, I think injecting a little bit more fun back into the watch space is required. You know, I know it's a safe space and we don't mention the moon swatch, but that try to bring in fun to the watch muggles put out there.
Yes.
And I think that concept hopefully will continue. We just hope that it'll continue in a way that's better than
a better way. Yeah, a metal watch. A metal watch, please.
A watch that is serviceable. A watch
Stainless steel.
Well, I mean, the Swatch does have, let's not forget, because I love its name, they have the Irony, which is a System 51 in a in a steel case, or metal case. I don't know if it's steel.
Metal.
However you may identify the Swatch collaborations, you know, for those who can get their hands on them and they like those type of things, it's a win. Like they see, whether that is through the Speedmaster or through the Blancpain 50 Fathoms, you know, they see a little bit of themselves in that thing, however they want to identify. And I appreciate that, you know, regardless of how we feel about the environmental impact of these disposable watches or the fact that, you know, that is because we are watch neckbeards. Okay. Putting that aside, putting our neckbeards aside, you know, the fact is that, you know, people for the first time, you know, perhaps for their first time, saw that and went, wow, what is that? It's brightly colored. I have an affinity towards the water. I have an affinity towards space. I want to get one of those. And, and they did. Cool. But for those of us on the other side of it, we have our other opinions. But I have to appreciate Swatch doing those collabs and doing that for good or for bad, because it did make buzz.
It did. Moving on Before, is there any other predictions that we need to drop in before we move on to closing notes? Because I've got one final little one, and it's just a passing note. I think Seiko are going to start using the C-shaped case a little bit more.
Oh, okay.
I
I was
think
gonna say
with.
heritage. Like I think a lot of the brands are gonna bring back heritage. Seiko coming out swinging at the end of 23. I mean, even Aquascar coming out swinging with the H1. You know, I think heritage coming into this year, it's still selling. I use the term heritage and not vintage. Notice that I made that differentiation. I feel like there's gonna be some more heritage stuff, I think, in 24. I mean, that's I think a softball. But yeah, you were saying
Now,
Seiko.
yeah, well, I think the C-shaped case, like you said, the with the emergence of the Seiko 5 and the Navitimer, I think these heritage models, for want of a better expression, are going to continue coming out of them. And you know, I think as well with that, hopefully they'll all be a sub £1,000, unlike the Navitimer. But you get the point. You know, they started strong. I think it's going to continue. I think, like you said,
Agreed.
companies have dialed into the fact that one watch a year that has a heritage or maybe is a carbon copy, just in modern technology, is still acceptable, be it a limited run or a non-limited run, because they made 15,000 of them.
I think we'll
Let's move.
see. My other one was like another continuation one. I think GMTs as well. I think we're just going to continue to see more of those this year. I think like we were talking about the Miyota movements, that 9075. I think that's going to come out in some newer watches, probably first quarter. I'm gonna bet the sometime in the first quarter of 24, we're gonna see some more GMTs come out, maybe even throughout the whole rest of the year. But I think that's gonna be a trend. I think they're popular. I think they sell well. I think a lot of people like them. So I think they'll just continue to keep moving them.
I
Hot
absolutely
take.
love it. I love a GMT movement, as we all know. Justin, I would actually like to see your thoughts in the future, when it gets around to it, on the NH34 versus 9075, because
Ooh.
obviously you have one, and I know as well of a watch that will be released shortly. Well, I mean, I know of one particular watch that has already been released and will due for, you know, to land with their owners in 2024, being the Holton Whiteout, and that runs an NH34. It'd be interesting. I don't know if your plans are to look at that kind of model when it comes out, but it would be
Yeah,
interesting to put
I've
those
got
together.
my long list. It's probably more of my short list, but yeah, getting a Holton GMT at some point. You know, I liked the whiteout when it came out. I'm not huge on white dials, so I'm kind of leaning more towards something like I've already got, like the Blackout Beachmaster. If they did something like that, I'll definitely be picking one of those up and then do a little comparison.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. That would be cool, especially like you said, to compare those two movements as well, you know, and within companies who aren't a part of the Miyota Seiko group, as it were, who create the movements, would be always good. Moving on to closing notes, gents. You are my guests. Again, I'm gonna wait for the showdown across the Zoom call to happen. But you know, you guys are my guests, so please, you know, fire away with your closing notes.
Go ahead, AJ.
So I'm gonna go to a Christmas gift that I got last year. And so rewind. I have a 7-year-old, so 7 years ago, I got my wife a Kindle Paperwhite. And that was largely because she was breastfeeding and she needed something to do while she was doing that. And so I got her that as a tool, as a new mom. That way she could, you know, read in the dark and also adjust the light. Well, after 7 years of hard use, as a mom tool and now a dad tool, because that's how I read. I turned it in. Here in the States, if you have a Kindle, if you're a Kindle owner, you can turn it in for some credit and you get 20% off of the next Kindle purchase.
Oh, nice.
So I, you know, any that way, either A, you get like I got $5 for a 7-year-old Kindle, but at least, you know, I'm hoping they either recycle it or it gets resold or whatever, and I get a discount. I got the newest Paperwhite Signature Edition, which just means it has like 32 gigs of storage and it has a
Nice.
Qi or wireless charging to it. I don't really care
Nice.
about the wireless. I cared about the storage because with Bluetooth, you can also have your Audible synced to it. And so
Oh,
now
nice.
it's a nicer tool, especially for I like when traveling and stuff. You know, as a dad, you may have to yield your phone to your kiddo for learning apps and games and such. And now I can just reach down, pair my headphones over to my Kindle, and continue with my reading or whatever I'm doing. And so it's both a reading and auditory device now. I think they're the just base Paperwhite, I think, is like $140. I got mine as a Christmas present, so I don't know how much it is. I think it's probably a little bit more because it's the signature edition. But that I just wanted to throw that out, especially, you know. And the screen's bigger. So it actually feels and reads a lot more like a paperback book, in my opinion. I can't remember the screen size difference, but it's a nicer experience I've found on this new Paperwhite. So,
This is perfect because mine is a book, so this will play right into this. So once you go and purchase one of those Kindles, then you can download this book that I'm about to drop. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got from John Tolkien, a Christmas book. It's called Letters from Father Christmas, and it's a compilation of these like letters that that Mr. Tolkien would like write to his kids from the North Pole when they were children.
So
every year this letter would show up to their house, and then they would read it as a family, and it would be like from an elf on whatever, it would have his address at the North Pole, and then it would be a story, and there's like a bunch of those in there, and this is a compilation of that from, it's from like the 1930s to whatever, and it's just a compilation of these Christmas these letters from Father Christmas to J.R.R. Tolkien and his family. So it's a pretty cool one.
Nice. I mean, you can read all of those guys in the lead up to next year's Christmas as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was just fresh off of Christmas, so I was like, man, I'm gonna peep this.
I mean, Tolkien's also a phenomenal writer. Whether you like Lord of the Rings or not, you have to give him credit.
I do.
Fact that he created that world in his own mind with associating histories and languages for every race is phenomenal. So I didn't know he did that, wrote Christmas letters for his kids. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Also, AJ, ties in really well, mate, for one of mine. I've got a book. Also, it's called The Scarlet Papers. It's not as cheerful as Letters from Father Christmas. It is all about double and triple agent spies during the Cold War. And it's a book by Matthew Richardson, and it follows effectively a intelligence history professor, okay, who gets wound into effectively a plot by a potential double/triple agent, okay?
Whoa.
Who is trying to effectively out the last high-ranking, at least double agent, within British intelligence during the Cold War. It's obviously all fictional, but the best bit about it is it is, there's enough of the real world written into it that it makes it more realistic, right? So they reference Christopher Andrew, who is a real historian who has written about intelligence. They reference Ed Sheeran. They reference Deliveroo, Spotify. They reference all these other things that are just now in our nomenclature across the world. And then they tie into the fact that there's this guy who is this, for want of a better expression, he's a bit of a failed professor. He's been, you know, he's not in the best place health-wise, relationship-wise, or his career. He could have been something more. And then he gets this opportunity via a mysterious letter. And does he go for it or does he not go for it? I mean, obviously, clearly he goes for it, because it wouldn't be a book if he didn't. And it's all about this journey, about going to retrieve this notebook, and then how do the intelligence services operate, and how do they operate around him, and all of the other kind of stuff. But the best bit is it's set in modern times. And then there's also flashbacks to this idea of, actually, if this triple agent/double agent existed, what did they get up to? And it's the flashbacks are from this spy's point of view during the Cold War. So it takes you from a journey from 1946 to 2022, which is phenomenal. Available on Kindle or Audible.
There we go.
Well, crap. Now I need the show notes, because I need to add that to mine.
I will send it to you. Cool. I will advocate the Audible, because actually the two narrators are really, really good. They have one narrator for the past and they have one narrator for the present, and it's just really well done. And I think actually it brought the story to life a little bit more than reading it. personally.
Okay.
Gents, thank you very much for giving up your time this evening and coming on to the first of the Zulu Time podcast panel episodes, where obviously we've clearly put the world to rights on watch predictions for 2024. Obviously, tune in, guys, for the next episode where we'll get the guys back on again because we've got all of our predictions completely wrong and we're going to have to, you know... redact it rapidly put out a replacement episode. However, I hope you enjoyed it, guys. I'm potentially going away with work for a little bit, so hopefully there won't be too much of a station break, for want of a better expression. Knowing my admin, I would have got at least a couple of episodes in the hopper. So hopefully you can just listen to those and they'll be like, I never went away. If I fail that, because it is the new year and all this kind of stuff is happening, I will have to just put up a station break episode. But hopefully, guys, you have enough back episodes of the Zulu Time podcast across my 4 years of doing this for you to enjoy while I'm potentially away. Gents, thank you very much for coming on. I will catch you again shortly.